The Invisible Man by H.G. Wells. Chapter 14. At Port Stowe. 10 o'clock the next morning found Mr. Marvel, unshaven, dirty, and travel-stained, sitting with the books beside him and his hands deep in his pockets, looking very weary, nervous and uncomfortable, and inflating his cheeks at infrequent intervals. On the bench outside a little inn on the outskirts of Port Stowe, beside him were the books, but now they were tied with string. The bundle had been abandoned in the pine woods beyond Bramblehurst. In accordance with the charge and the plans of the Invisible Man, Mr. Marvel sat on the bench, and although no one took the slightest notice of him, his agitation remained at fever heat. His hands would go ever and again to his pockets with a curious nervous fumbling. When he had been sitting for the best part of an hour, however, an elderly mariner, carrying a newspaper, came out of the inn and sat down beside him. "Pleasant day," said the mariner. Mr. Marvel glanced about him with something very like terror. "Very," he said.
"Just seasonal weather for the time of year," said the mariner, taking no denial.
"Quite," said Mr. Marvel. The mariner produced a toothpick, and, saving his regard, was engrossed thereby for some minutes. His eyes, meanwhile, were at liberty to examine Mr. Marvel's dusty figure, and the books beside him. As he approached Mr. Marvel, he heard a sound like the dropping of coins into a pocket. He was struck by the contrast of Mr. Marvel's appearance with this suggestion of opulence. Thence his mind wandered back again to a topic that had taken a curiously firm hold in his imagination.
"Books?"
he said suddenly, noisily finishing with a toothpick. Mr. Marvel stared and looked at them.
"Oh, yes," he said. "Yes, they're books." "There's some extraordinary things in books," said the mariner.
I believe you," said Mr. Marvel.
"And some extraordinary things out of them," said the mariner.
"True likewise." He eyed his interlocutor and then glanced about him.
"There's some extraordinary things in newspapers, for example," said the mariner.
"There are?"
"In this newspaper," said the mariner.
"Ah," said Mr. Marvel.
"There's a story," said the mariner,
fixing Mr. Marvel with an eye that was firm and deliberate.
"There's a story about an invisible man, for instance."
Mr. Marvel pulled his mouth askew and scratched his cheek and felt his ears glowing.
"What will they be writing next?" he asked faintly.
"Austria or America?"
"Neither," said the mariner. "Here."
"Lord," said Mr. Marvel, starting.
"When I say here," said the mariner to Mr. Marvel's intense relief, "I don't, of course, mean here in this place. I mean hereabouts."
"An invisible man?" said Mr. Marvel. "And what's he been up to?"
"Everything," said the mariner, controlling Marvel with his eye, and then amplifying every blessed thing.
"I ain't seen a paper for 4 days," said Marvel.
"Iping's the place he started at," said the mariner.
"Indeed," said Mr. Marvel.
"He started there, and where he come from nobody don't seem to know. Here it is. Peculiar story from Iping, and it says in this paper that the evidence is extraordinary strong. Extraordinary."
"Lord," said Mr. Marvel.
"But then it's an extraordinary story. There's a clergyman and a medical gent witness. Saw him all right and proper, or leastways didn't see him. He was staying, it says, at the Coach and Horses, and no one don't seem to have been aware of his misfortune. It says aware of his misfortune until an altercation at the inn. It says his bandages on his head was tore off, and it was observed that his head was invisible. Attempts were at once made to secure him, but casting off his garments, it says he succeeded in escaping, but not until after a desperate struggle, in which he had inflicted serious injuries. It says, on our worthy and able constable, Mr. J. A. Jaffers. Pretty straight story, eh? Names and everything."
"Lord," said Mr. Marvel, looking nervously about him, trying to count the money in his pockets by his unaided sense of touch. "And a fool of a strange and novel idea. It sounds most astonishing,
don't it? Extraordinary, I call it. I'd never heard of invisible men before. I haven't. But nowadays one hears such a lot of extraordinary things that—"
"That all he did?" asked Marvel, trying to seem at his ease.
"It's enough, ain't it?"
said the mariner. "Didn't go back by chance?" asked Marvel. "Just escaped, and that's all, eh?"
"All," said the mariner. "Why, ain't it enough?"
"Oh, quite enough," said Marvel.
"I should think it was enough," said the mariner. "I should think it was enough. "He didn't have any pals. It don't say he had any pals, does it?" asked Mr. Marvel, anxious. "Ain't one of a sort for you?" asked the mariner. "No, thank heaven, as one might say, he didn't." He nodded his head slowly. "It makes me regular uncomfortable," the bear thought, "of that chap running around the country. He is at present at large, and from certain evidence it is supposed that he has taken, took, I suppose they mean, the road to Port Stowe. You see, we're right in it. None of your American wonders, this time. And just to think the things he might do, what'd you be, if he took a drop over and above and had a fancy go for you? Suppose he wants to rob. Who can prevent him? He can trespass, he can burgle, he can walk through a cordon of policemen, as easier me as you could give the slip to a blind man. Easier, for here these blind chaps here are uncommon sharp, I'm told, and wherever there's liquor to be fancy. Well, he's got a tremendous advantage, certainly, said Mr. Marvel. And, well, you're right, said the mariner, he has. All this time Mr. Marvel had been glancing about him intently, listening for faint footfalls, trying to detect imperceptible movements. He seemed on the point of some great resolution. He coughed behind his hand, and looked about him again, listened, bent towards the mariner, and lowered his voice. The fact of it is, I happen to know just a thing or two about this invisible man from private sources. Oh, said the mariner, interested. You? Yes, said Mr. Marvel. Me. Indeed, said the mariner, and may I ask, you'll be astonished, said Mr. Marvel behind his hand. It's tremendous. Indeed, said the mariner. The fact is, began Mr. Marvel eagerly in a confidential undertone, suddenly his expression changed marvelously. Ow, he said. He rose stiffly in his seat. His face was eloquent of physical suffering. Wow, he said. What's up, said the mariner, concerned. Toothache, said Mr. Marvel, and put his hand to his ear. He caught hold of his books. I must be getting on, I think, he said. He edged in a curious way along the seat away from his interlocutor. But you was just going to tell me about this here invisible man, protested the mariner. Mr. Marvel seemed to consult with himself. Hoax, said a voice. It's a hoax, said Mr. Marvel. But it's in the paper, said the mariner. Hoax all the same, said Marvel. I know the chap that started the lie. There ain't no invisible man whatsoever, blimey. But how about this paper? Do you mean to say not a word of it, said Marvel stoutly. The mariner stared, paper in hand. Mr. Marvel jerkily faced about. Wait a bit, said the mariner, rising and speaking slowly. Do you mean to say... I do, said Mr. Marvel. Then why did you let me go on and tell you all this blasted stuff, then? What do you mean by letting a man make a fool of himself like that for, eh? Mr. Marvel blew out his cheeks. The mariner was suddenly very red indeed. He clenched his hands. I've been talking here for this 10 minutes, he said. And you little pot-bellied, leathery-faced son of an old brute, couldn't have the elementary Andrews. Don't you come bandying words with me, said Mr. Marvel. Bending words. I'm a jolly good mind. Come up, said a voice, and Mr. Marvel was suddenly whirled about and started marching off in a curious, spasmodic manner. You'd better move on, said the mariner. Who's moving on? Said Mr. Marvel. He was receding obliquely with a curious, hurrying gait, with occasional violent jerks forward. Somewhere along the road he muttered a monologue, protests and recriminations. Silly devil, said the mariner. Legs wide apart, elbows akimbo, watching a receding figure. I'll show you, you silly ass. Hoaxing me. It's here, on the paper. Mr. Marvel retorted incoherently, and receding was hidden by a bend in the road. But the mariner still stood magnificent in the midst of the way, until the approach of a butcher's cart dislodged him. Then he turned himself towards Port Stowe. Full of extraordinary asses, he said softly to himself. Just to take me down a bit. That was his silly game. It's on the paper. And there was another extraordinary thing he was presently to hear. And it happened quite close to him. And that was a vision of a fistful of money, no less, travelling without visible agency, along by the wall at the corner of St. Michael's Lane. A brother mariner had seen this wonderful sight at that very morning. He had snatched the money forthwith and been knocked headlong. And when he had got to his feet, the butterfly money had vanished. Our mariner was in the mood to believe anything, he declared, but that was a bit too stiff. Afterwards, however, he began to think things over. The story of the flying money was true, and all that about the neighbourhood, even from the August London and Country Banking Company. from the tills of shops and inns, doors standing that sunny weather entirely open. Money had been quietly and dexterously making off that day in handfuls and rouleaux, floating quietly along by the walls in shady places, dodging quickly from the approaching eyes of men, and it had, though no man had traced it, invariably ended its mysterious flight in the pocket of that agitated gentleman in the obsolete silk hat, sitting outside the little inn on the outskirts of Port Stowe. It was 10 days after, and indeed only when the burdock story was already old, that the mariner collected these facts, and began to understand how near he had been to the wonderful invisible man. End of chapter 14. For Lit to Go. Available on the web at fcit.usf.edu.